Welcome, everybody. This is Amy Barnhart, co-founder of StrongMarriageNow.com, and I'm here with Dr. Dana today. Welcome to all of you that are participating in this month's monthly call as part of our Strong Marriage Now community. As many of you know, each month as part of this special membership, we hold a call where we share a topic of the month for around 15 minutes, and after that, you get to personally talk to Dr. Dana and ask your question. Just so you know, the call is scheduled to last around an hour today, and so I don't want to waste any of your time. We're going to get right into this month's topic, which is Facebook threatening your marriage? Now, did you know that the average Facebook user spends around 45 minutes every day on Facebook? And were you also aware that Facebook and online relationships are the fastest growing cause of divorce today? It used to be that most people met their hookups or whatever in the workplace, but now Facebook and online relationships has by far surpassed that. And because of how many marriages are being hurt by this situation, that's why we really wanted to address this month's call about this important danger. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And after the topic of the month, as I mentioned, you'll have the opportunity to talk to Dr. Dana and get your questions answered. Now, just so you know, you do not have to have a question about this month's topic. It can be any relationship question that's on your mind. You can talk to Dana about anything that you want to ask her. And after, I'll get into the logistics about exactly how you'll ask your question after Dana covers the month's topic. So, Dana, take it away.
Thanks, Amy. Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Dana, and I am ready to talk about another tough topic. I wanted to let you all know first that I actually have a bit of a cold today, so please excuse me as I clear my throat and maybe even sniff a little here and there, but I didn't want to miss the call, so I apologize if the quality is not as good as some of our past calls, but I just wanted to give you a heads up about that. Also, Amy says that we have a bunch of you on the call again, but the last couple of months, not a lot of you wanted to ask your questions out loud. And again, that's okay. We have some people on there. Maybe some people just want to hear the questions. A lot of people like to type in the questions, and Amy will explain how that works in a little bit. And she can read them out again if you need her to. But I wanted to remind you all that are on the call that it sometimes really helps to have you on the phone in case I have a clarifying question or, you know, further questions about what your question is, or if I need some more information to really give you a more in-depth answer. So just wanted to let you guys know, if you feel like raising your hands, that would be great. And talking either way, writing it or asking it. And also I wanted to let everybody know that this call is being recorded, and it will be available for community members, for you guys, to listen to again. And here's a disclaimer I have to say every time. You guys have heard this before. I need to make sure that you all know that by being on this call, you're agreeing to the terms of service, which basically say that I am not agreeing to be your therapist at this time, and this isn't one-on-one counseling. I'm just going to give you some really important information and things you can do to really improve your relationship. So, okay, everybody got that? Okay, good. So let's get started. The topic today is the dangers of Facebook. And, excuse me, you might ask, you know, why Facebook? Well, Facebook offers one an opportunity to develop and, or oftentimes to rekindle, that's important, and we'll get to that later, an emotionally intimate relationship with someone in a seemingly, I say that in quotation marks, harmless way. The problem is emotionally intimate relationships online, or frankly emotionally intimate relationships anywhere, are not harmless to the marriage at all. They're not harmless. So did you guys hear what Amy said earlier about that online relationships have now replaced the workplace as the leading venue to begin an affair? So I'm going to say that again. Online relationships have now replaced the workplace. So it used to be the workplace as the leading venue to begin an affair. So, you know, that's right, guys. It's not happening at the water cooler anymore. It's happening on the computer, oftentimes in your very own home. You know, it's interesting, though. They did this survey, and not surprisingly, most people who were surveyed stated that they did consider intense online relationships to be infidelity. So those people thought, yeah, okay, this is infidelity. However, as many as 50% of the people who were actually engaging in an online relationship, so half of them, reported that they did not believe that they were being unfaithful. Half of them thought it was just fine. And this is an anonymous survey. They weren't just defending themselves. I know, isn't that crazy? Half of those people who were engaged in online relationships, serious online relationships, said that they did not believe they were being unfaithful. So the problem is with this is that the latest research indicates that as many as 30% of divorce litigation can be linked to online affairs right now. 30% have start either, you know, the affair started by meeting somebody online, rekindling with someone online, getting in touch with an old flame through Facebook or
Ouch.
Classmates, 30%. Now, one of the reasons for this is because a third of cyber affairs actually escalate to personal contact. So and most people think it's actually more than that, but only about a third of cyber affairs actually escalate to personal contact. But the other really important reason is because becoming attached to someone online by definition creates distance between the married couple. If you are telling your stories and the first person you call is your person online, or the first person you email, the person you're telling your hopes and your secrets and your dreams to is the person online, it's not your spouse. It by definition creates distance between the married couple. And emotionally investing in any other relationship just leaves less to invest in the marriage. And we've talked about all this before, guys. Marriage is hard, right? It's hard to keep that connection. It takes time. It takes effort. And if you're emotionally investing somewhere else, you are not investing in the marriage. So, but finally, and, you know, this is the part that people really, really need to understand about online relationships is the most potent reason that online affairs are so alluring is because most of it happens in one's head. And that's critical, right? The very nature of online communication enables one to hear what they want to hear and see what they want to see. You know, if you say, how was your day? And the person online says, my day was fine. What you can hear is, my day was fine, right? You can interpret it however you want because it's in writing. It's just when you communicate through text and email, which I'm also not a big fan of, by the way. But it allows you to filter everything, and that allows you to build a fantasy of who that person is and how deeply that they feel about you and how deeply you feel about them. The other part of the fantasy is, you know, the secrecy and the excitement surrounding the relationship can be so intense that it actually can become an addiction. I'm going to tell you guys a story later in just a minute, and it really does become an addiction to get that sensation and get that high every day to get contact with that person and get that rush of having somebody flirt with you and care about you, and again, all filtered through your head. So all the needs that you have, that person is meeting because you're filtering it all through your own head. So, but the other thing, too, is, you know, let's be honest. I mean, sometimes it's not only fantasy. Interestingly enough, and this has been research done for years and years and years, people will say things to someone online or through written communication, in essence, that they would never communicate face-to-face. They bare their souls, share their dreams, they talk about their fears, and, you know, ironically, for the first time, you know, they can really feel truly known, which I don't know if you guys know is one of the main quests for the human experience, is to be truly known, to feel you know, like that, like somebody really understands them. So here's a real-life example that I was talking about earlier, so of a couple that I actually know and saw for a while. So I changed their names, of course, but for this call I'm going to call them Leslie and James. So, okay, Leslie and James had been married for 15 years. They had two kids and reported that they were both reasonably happy with their marriage, you know, before all this happened. So like many of us, they began to explore the new and exciting world of Facebook. I have a Facebook account, just so you guys know. I mean, I understand. I wanted to see what that was about. I probably only check it about every 3 months, but I have one. So James, he began connecting with old friends. Specifically, he began frequently talking to a woman that he had briefly dated in high school. And they realized, you know, after talking that they really had a lot in common today, and they really, really liked reminiscing about, you know, the good old days and how they used to feel and all that was going on and their old friends and their old adventures and their youth, and they really liked talking about all that stuff. So James began spending more and more time online talking to this woman. Interestingly, and this is not an accident, he also became increasingly irritated and impatient with his wife and kids. You know, and the demands that they had and what they needed from him and the fact that they didn't give him those same sensations and all the reasons why, but he became more and more irritated with them. And all the while, he had been convincing himself that because this was an online relationship and it wasn't sexual, he was just engaged in an innocent friendship, right? That's what he told himself. There's no harm, there's no foul, there's no touching, everything's fine. After a couple months, of course, Leslie was miserable. Leslie was the wife, if you guys remember. And she convinced him to come to therapy. So, you know, we did our initial interview, and one of her main complaints was, and she didn't know about this, by the way, but one of her main complaints was how much time he spent on that, which she called it, stupid Facebook. And he got really mad. He really defended it. He said, you know, it's not hurting anyone. We're just friends. And at that point, you know, I really delved into, and he told me about a few people that he talked to regularly, of course, one being this woman. And, you know, he said, we're just friends. And, you know, we poked a little further at that. And he did admit, he said, you know, yeah, it makes me feel good. But, you know, what's the harm in, and this is his quote, by the way, what's the harm in lining them up if you don't take the shot? And, of course, that sent Leslie through the roof, and she was hurt and furious. And, you know, I had to explain to James that an emotional affair occurs when we think about and crave emotional intimacy with someone other than our spouse. Let me rephrase that, or let me say it again, in fact. An emotional affair means we think about and crave emotional intimacy with someone other than our spouse. So, James, you know, he considered himself a trustworthy guy, and he said, you know, he didn't want to have an affair. That was never his intention. So he, you know, rather nonchalantly agreed to sever the relationship, right? He said, no problem. Whatever. I don't care. I'll just stop talking to her, he said. No worries. Unfortunately, yeah, and this is the part we talked about before, what he learned was that this was harder than he thought. James had, you know, unintentionally and unconsciously become far more attached to this woman he was talking to online than he realized. And additionally, she was more attached to him than he realized. So when he tried to sever the relationship, she really stepped it up, the woman online. She professed her true love all of a sudden. Now they're more than friends, right? She began emailing him directly, and she even called him at home a few times. And unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, I guess if you look at it that way, Leslie answered the phone, right? So at this point, she was pretty much done. You know, the good news is James sincerely did not want a divorce. So he actually closed down his Facebook page, completely ended this online relationship, and had to deal with the loss of that and talking about that and how he missed that. And, you know, and then, of course, we had to do all of the work around, you know, what that relationship was providing for him that his marriage hadn't been providing for him. And we kicked all that up, and Leslie was able to, while she couldn't talk about his youth because she wasn't there with him, she could really provide a lot of the intimacy and emotional contact that he was getting. And we worked on how to do that. But so after just, you know, really a few more sessions, James and Leslie were back on track and happily married. So, you know, look, I'm not saying that we should not have Facebook pages. I just admitted that I have one. Again, though I don't regularly check it because I don't have a lot of interest in it, I actually like to talk to people. And we have friends who we connect with online. I've talked to people in high school and so on and so forth. But, you know, as a general rule, we should never, online or otherwise, have close friendships with people of the opposite sex who our partner does not know. And we should never allow ourselves to get so involved with another person, be it male or female, online or in person, that we stop putting our marriage first. And Facebook simply provides an opportunity to do that easier than we've ever had in the history of people before. So additionally, we should just never let any activity, whether that be checking our Facebook online, what did Amy say, for 45 minutes a day?
Yeah,
can you imagine
crazy.
If you put 45 minutes a day into your marriage? That would be great. You know, so, you know, we should never, you know, let any activity, whether that be Facebook or video games. We'll have to have a whole other conversation, Amy, about the
right.
impact of video games, you know, that grown people are having on their marriage now. But, or, you know, I don't, or even playing poker with your friends, you know, in real contact. And none of those activities should ever have a priority over your marriage. So, you know, I just wanted to tell everybody here, watch out, people. Facebook can be fun, but it also can be extremely, extremely dangerous.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Dana. I just wanted to share one other statistic that I thought was just occurred to me that was relevant to this call, and that's that I don't know if everyone knows that typically if someone leaves a marriage for an affair, so someone, you get divorced and you end up hooking up with the person that you were cheating on, there's only a 25% chance that that marriage will survive. if you leave your spouse for an old flame, there's actually a 78% chance that marriage, that new marriage will survive. So those old flame relationships can develop into very, very strong connections. And so even when it maybe starts small, it really can be hugely damaging. So I just
right.
wanted to share that.
That, of course, is not evidence to leave your spouse for an old flame,
no.
by the way, just because that actually has a better shot.
That wasn't what I was suggesting.
Of working out. But no, what she was implying basically is that there's something about that high school sweetheart. There's something about that connection, that crush you had in high school that maybe was never reciprocated, that runs deep with us. It's old, old stuff, and it really can be addicting and make us make choices. You know, I mean, again, people can walk away from their marriages of 10, 15, 20 years. They walk away from their families. They walk away from all this stuff. So, you know, again, take away from that statistic more to mean that that those relationships are even more dangerous than just meeting a stranger that you hadn't talked to before.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
That's what I meant. Okay. So thanks so much for covering that. And now we're going to transition the call into the time for opening it up for questions. So as a reminder, you can talk about any relationship question that you have on your mind, not just today's topic. And the way it's going to work is Dr. Dana will spend around 3 to 5 minutes per question, and unfortunately not a lot longer than that because we want to make sure we answer as many people's questions as we possibly can. And we do recognize that some of these things that you guys want to ask about are tough and they're hard to deal with in only 3 to 5 minutes, but we're trying to make sure we manage the time to serve as many of you as we possibly can. So to help use the time effectively for the rest of the call, please, when we call on you, please just dive right in and ask your question. We know you guys have really important stories and lots of great background to add context to the question, but we're asking you to as much as you possibly can, get right to the point and ask your question when it's your turn. And also remember that we do have the private forum as part of the community where you can share a lot more background or, you know, just vent about something that's bothering you if that's what you feel like you need to do. But this call, we really want to focus on getting your specific questions answered. So the way you will indicate that you want to talk to Dr. Dana is you raise your hand and get in line by pressing *2 on your phone. And that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is to use the monthly call event page that we emailed you. There's a link, and you can click on that, and then you can type in your question. So either way works great. And then when it's your turn, I'll let you know by identifying you by the last 4 digits of your phone number, and that's how I'll be able to – how you'll know that I'm unmuting you. And once I do unmute you, just let us know your first name and just dive right into asking your question. So let me just get back to the panel here. So does anybody want to ask their questions and press *2 on their phone? I see lots of you guys out there. Nobody's raised their hand quite yet, so let me go check the webcast questions. And it looks like I've got some questions there, so let me grab one of those. Actually, and this one is related to our current the topic that we just talked about. So this one comes from Paula, and she asks, is it possible to save a marriage if a spouse continues to cheat by having online affairs? So can you speak to that, Dr. Dana?
Well, many of you have heard me say before that I really feel like that a marriage is rarely over, that it's possible to save a marriage at any point. But you've also heard me say that one of the first steps in surviving an affair is ending the relationship and ending all the other relationships. There are people, like I said before, that become addicted to the online affair. What was the line that he used in, I changed his name, so I can't remember what I changed his name to.
I think it was James.
Oh, thank you.
Leslie,
James,
maybe?
Thank you. Right. James, what's the harm in lining them up if you don't take the shot? There's a lot of people that are addicted to the lining them up. They're addicted to having somebody fall for them, need them, like them, want them, pursue them. And maybe they're not planning on ever physically consummating the relationship. I'm assuming that's what he means by take the shot. But they really like that chase, and they really like that sensation. And that stems from insecurity. That stems from a need to feel wanted and loved. It can come from a midlife crisis. It can come from, again, not getting those needs met in the marriage, maybe feeling constantly criticized and not enough and less than in the marriage. So online, we've got all these people telling you you're amazing and you're incredible and, you know, I want you, and that can be incredibly addicting. So in answer to your question, of course, can you survive that forever? No. I mean, you know, even I wouldn't put up with that forever. Do you need to figure out why that's still going on? Yes. Just saying stop it isn't going to be enough. That person, hopefully along with their spouse, needs to figure out what of those things, or what combination of all the things that I just mentioned is going on. Why do they have that need to continue those online relationships? What hole are they filling? What addiction are they meeting? And what's going on? And sometimes that takes just, you know, some real good self-discovery, some honesty. It might take some therapy. You know, there's even, interestingly enough, because of online relationships, you guys probably have all heard of Sex Addicts Anonymous and those types of groups before. They've even done sitcoms on Sex Addicts Anonymous. But they're now applying them to online relationships. That's how much of a problem and a predicament it has come in society, because, again, maybe they were not consummating those relationships, but it's still considered a sexual addiction if you have to, as James said, line them up time after time after time. So, yes, can a marriage survive that? Absolutely. They need to figure out why that's going on, get those needs met some other way, in a more appropriate way that is honoring the marriage, and hopefully those online relationships will stop.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Dana. So we got a couple of people raising their hands so far, and there's lots more of you on the phone that haven't raised your hand yet, so please don't be shy. If you want to talk to Dana personally, press star 2. I'm going to unmute 6806. If you could state your name and your question, please.
Hello, my name's Dwayne.
Hi, Dwayne.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. My question is, my wife is having some texting relationships that I'm supposed to be unaware of, that I am aware of, because she says she's talking to other people and I know she's not. How do you bring that up?
Why are you supposed to be unaware of them?
Well, because she's gone to college and she's just got a lot of guy friends and they're texting till 1 in the morning and she keeps telling me it's girlfriends, and I know it's not because she doesn't have any. And I do know this because we just know each other so well, but
right,
it's something I just can't bring up, and it's eating away at me because I do know, and I'm not supposed to know.
Do you feel like you can't bring it up because she's going to get angry that you know about it, or she's just going to get defensive, or what, you know, again, where's the reason why you feel like you can't, I guess, confront her with these relationships?
Well, because basically she says the marriage is over, and I don't.
So you're treading on very thin ice at this point already. So,
Well, I'm tired of treading. I guess it's been going on for a long time, and I know, and she thinks I'm this big super spy, and I'm not a super spy. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to know when you have 6,000 texts a month on your phone.
Right.
That you're not talking to, you know, your class is 90% guys, and you have one lady that's 50, and not that I'm judging, and you're not. It's 20-year-old. She doesn't talk on her phone at that time of the morning.
Right. Again, you know, being in the position that you're in is an incredibly, I mean, probably one of the most difficult positions, where there is a right course of action. There's something that if the marriage was solid, or you guys were, you know, at least even more in, or she was, you know, less a flight risk, that I would, of course, suggest that at that point that you were to confront her, that you were to say, you know, what's going on, and have these conversations, and do everything that I just said in that last call, figure out what need she was getting met, figure out what was not happening. Again, if you feel like confronting her with this is going to then push her to a point of no return, then that's a whole different conversation, and that has to do more with, you know, what are you willing to do to wait it out? What are you willing to do to see if this is something that's going to stop? What are you willing to do? And by the way, some of those questions that I just mentioned in the call before, finding out what needs aren't being met, finding out what is it that she's not getting in the relationship, those are all things that you could find out without confronting about the text. Those are all things that if she was willing to talk to you, you could really get to the bottom of. And, again, attempt to provide those, attempt to fill those holes, again, for her in some way, without necessarily confronting her, if you really feel like confronting her about the text is going to be a flight risk at some point. So I guess I would say kind of a combination of the two. It's a very
difficult
position.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
She has come to me today, actually, about a couple of the girls at school. She's very upset. Had called her. I don't want this to sound bad, but basically, the school bicycle. And she is not like that, but she was confronted. And she came to me with this today. Somebody said this, that I was sleeping with all these guys at school, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. And that's not what I'm doing. But to bring that to me,
mm-hmm.
and to say that to me, is just, I guess at the end of the day, I'm this has been going on for a year.
Right. Again, I just want to
throw it on the table, and because I've done everything. I've been nice. I know what issues aren't being met. I get it, but I can't give her those issues when she's on her phone 23 hours a week texting and doesn't even, you know.
Well, again, my advice would be to bring those things up. My advice would be to say that, which say, here's, you know, again, to lay it out for her. This is what I think is going on. This is what I think I have not been doing for you. This is what I think the marriage has not been providing for you. This is, and coming up with a plan. This is what I want to provide for you. This is how I plan on doing it. An apology, you know, I'm not sure, you know, if you've seen our apology videos or blogs and so forth, coming up with an effective apology. I would put all of that out there and say, I kind of know what's going on. And this is, again, what I plan to do about that. At that point, you know, she's going to have to make a decision. If it's been going on for a year, that's just torture for you, Duane, and that's, you know, it's just really, really difficult. So I would probably, again, in sort of a loving, this is what I think you need, this is what I'm willing to do, and this is how I'm willing to do it, I would probably have that conversation now.
Okay.
Okay. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Duane, for that question. Sorry it's so painful for you. I'm going to take a webinar question right now, and let me just grab it here. So our next question comes from Sandy, and she asks, how can I ignore an argument?
That's an interesting question. Ignore an argument. Wow, I wish I had Sandy on the phone. Sandy, call in.
Exactly.
If you want to. Ignore an argument. That can mean many different things. I suppose if what you're saying is how can you avoid a fight, you know, my answer sounds glib, but I will say it anyway, which is simply don't fight. It takes two people to have an argument. It takes two people to get in the ring. It takes two people to say mean things and to go back and forth and so on and so forth. So if what you're saying is how can I avoid having a non-productive, where we say mean things and we yell at each other, altercation, my answer to you is just don't do it. And you know, again, and let the other person know, I'm willing to talk to you about this when you're calm. I'm willing to talk to you about this, in a manner that's loving and that's productive, but I'm not willing to do this with you. If that's what you mean. If what you're saying is, how can I avoid a fight, meaning how can I avoid all fights? Well, you know, again, monogamy is hard, right? I don't think that we should fight. You guys, hopefully many of you have heard that section in the communication videos about not fighting. But we will have disagreements with our spouse. We're supposed to. Many a marriage, in fact, has broken up because the couple never argued, which means, excuse me, they were never honest with each other. They never let the other person know they were upset. They never told them what they needed and what they weren't getting and how they hurt their feelings and so on and so forth. So while I agree that one should avoid non-productive, angry, hurtful yelling that's just about somebody winning and somebody losing, I do think that that marriages require some pretty intense, heated, passionate conversations sometimes. So, again, without being able to tell, she didn't happen to call in, did she, Amy?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, I mean, I know she's on the phone, but...
Nobody else has raised their hand quite
okay.
yet. If anybody wants to raise your hand to get in line, start to. We've got another person waiting, but
okay.
The other folks on the line haven't raised their hand yet.
That's fine. So I would just say this. If you want to avoid an argument, avoid the argument. And I know that there are people that... I've been told before that when they say, look, I'm not going to fight, the other person keeps going, and they keep kicking it up, and they keep, you know, and they'll say something even meaner or even harsher, or and I realize that. And in that regard, I would say to call them on that, which is to say, look, I know you want me to fight you right now. I know you want to get in an argument, but I'm not going to. I see that you just said that mean thing so that maybe I will say something back and then we would be off to the races, but I love you and I'm not going to. Call them on what they're doing. I noticed that you're chasing me around and you won't let me leave the room because you're very, very upset. And I promise that I want to talk to you about this, but I don't think I will talk to you about it right now. So really, really, you know, let them know that you know what's going on. You know they're trying to get you to get in the ring and that you're not going to. Interestingly enough, and let me end it with this, because you love them. I'm not going to get in the ring with you because I love you. And us getting in a fight and hurting each other isn't going to solve anything. So, you know, I would that's the recommendation I would give for both of those scenarios. I don't exactly know which one she meant.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dana. So we're going to go with the caller here who's raised their hand. It's caller number ending in 3043. You are unmuted. If you could state your name and your question, please.
Hi, Dr. Dana. I'm Kathleen. And my question is close to what you were talking about. My husband won't engage in a conversation about our relationship, and he will say that he'll talk about it later, because I'll say, okay, well, if you don't want to talk about it now, we can talk about it later. He won't talk about it later.
Mm-hmm.
He chooses just not to engage. So can you help?
Yes. Well, there's usually a couple different reasons for that. One of the reasons, and one of the primary reasons, interestingly enough, that one person often will not engage is because the other person that they're with always wins. And by that I mean one of us in a relationship is usually the better arguer, the more logical one, the one who can make more points, the one who has a more righteous standing of, you know, right and wrong. And the other person, there's lots of people who go blank in an argument who can't make their point, and they end up losing, basically, or looking stupid or feeling bad. And so they just won't engage at all. They get sort of this deer in the headlights, I'm not going to have this conversation because it's not going to go anywhere and I don't know what to say. In those cases, interestingly enough, I highly recommend, and I'm not sure if he would be willing to do this, I highly recommend the written form, as it were, not in a back-and-forth argument, and in a, you know, an email, I say this, you say that, because still the better arguer will win that. But if that person would be willing to express what they're feeling without the other person in the room, as it were, without the other person having a counter-argument, without the other person saying, yeah, but this, or what about that, or how about, you know, again, without the better arguer being able to make their points and make their stand and make that person wrong, I'm wondering if they would be willing to do that. If, in fact, he won't, again, I would recommend sometimes a third party, whether that be a therapist or a friend or something like that, will, you know, to mediate that sort of an interchange can help as well. Do you know if have you ever talked to him about going to therapy?
Yes.
And he has. Okay. And would he go with you?
Yes, he would.
Okay. So that, again, I would try the written one first, you know, because therapy is expensive and takes a lot of time and it's hard to find the right therapist and everything. So I would try that first, see if he's willing to. And again, I would recommend then from your point of view that what you don't do is come back with all, you know, because I'm sure you have another point of view. I'm sure you have the reasons as to why that doesn't make sense and all of the holes in his argument and all the reasons why, you know, all that stuff. I would highly recommend that if he is able to share with you his point or his part of his point of view and what he needs or what he wants or what he's unhappy with, that you take some time and not give the counter argument, and try to find anything in that that you can honor, anything in that that you can hear, that you can, and I don't even mean like admit defeat or say, yeah, you're right. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about anything you can find that says, hey, you know, I really noticed by this sense, it sounds like you're really hurt. And I really see, you know, you said here that this happened. I had no idea that that's how you felt about it. Anything that you can do to really show him that you heard him, may increase the chances that he's able to communicate about that. And then also, please understand that in general, this is I don't mean to make this sound like a sexist comment because it's not, but women are taught to talk about feelings. Women are taught to talk about feelings in 27 different languages, in 14 different ways, up and down and around and sideways, and we can talk about our feelings all day long. Now, that's a generalization. There's some women that were never taught that and don't know how to do that, and there's some men that were. But in general, you know, men are usually taught to talk about anger and talk about happiness. They're not really taught to talk about sadness and vulnerability and fear and all those other things. And so it's quite possible that he doesn't even have the words and the knowledge of how to express that. And that's going to require some help, I think, probably on his part.
I would agree. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for your question.
All right. Our next question, thank you so much, Kathleen. Our next question comes from Donna. It's a webcast question, and She asks how to approach an angry husband. She's been separated 4 months and said, sorry to hurt you, but won't give up on the affair or talk in person. They're only communicating by text.
Ugh. I hate the only communicating by text.
Yeah.
I hate the only communicate. It's funny because I just said to Kathleen on the call, you know, communicate through written word, and now I'm going to flip that around and say, when is it back and forth sort of thing? Similar, but interesting enough, to the online relationships that I was talking about earlier. When we communicate via email and text, that is completely filtered through our own minds, our own anger, our own defensiveness. You know, again, if they're communicating about the kids, hey, can you pick up the kids at 3 o'clock? And that person says, fine, I'll be able to pick up the kids. You know, one person will hear, fine, you know, I'll be able to pick up, and, you know, and one person will hear, you know, that's fine, I'll be able to pick up the, you know, it completely is up for interpretation. So I find that texting and emailing almost always makes the situation worse. Because all of the emotions that we feel, we project onto that email, and we interpret it through that stance and so on and so forth. And again, I realize I just said to Kathleen to have her husband write all that down. But if you remember, I told her not to have a back and forth exchange, to just let him write all of what he is feeling down without, you know, again, the filtering and the back and forth and the arguing about that. So that is incredibly difficult. I couldn't get from the question, Amy, did that mean that she was only willing to communicate by text or that he was only willing to communicate by text?
Well, I read you everything that she wrote. I know she's on the webcast, so if you want to respond back on the webcast or raise your hand. Oh, wait, I think she's got a little. Husband will not answer question in person or online/text on what he needs, wants, or why he left.
Uh-huh.
So that's a little bit more information. Thanks for sending that in, Donna.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Wow, that's an incredibly difficult situation. You know, interestingly enough, and this is just so, I believe she mentioned that there was some sort of an affair going on, right, Amy? Is that what she said in the original question? Yeah,
I think so, yeah.
One of the really sad and difficult components of an affair is that at some point the person, he can become more loyal to the person he's having an affair with than he is to his spouse and his children. And again, that's excruciatingly painful. I'm so sorry for your situation. But it sounds like to some degree he's just kind of unwilling to possibly interact or have that conversation, in part because it might make it better. And you might be able to fix some things. And then sometimes people are so far out and so sure that it's this new relationship that they want that they don't really even want the possibility that they might work on their marriage. Though I will go back to what I said to the caller, Kathleen, and say that sometimes they don't want to share those feelings because they're going to get shot down. Because for him, you know, possibly in another conversation, he had said, look, I really don't feel like you are meeting my needs sexually. And I'm just giving a hypothetical. And what he got back was, yeah, well, that's because you do this and you do that, and then you're always, you know, you'll go out, you're drinking with your friend, you know. And so it's possible that to some degree he feels like that's not going to get him anywhere and that's not going to go anywhere and that he's simply going to get met with all the arguments as to why he shouldn't feel that way. I don't know the reasons. Possibly maybe asking him, again, I don't like your text messages, but asking him not to talk about those things, but maybe to talk about why he won't talk about those things so you can address that. You know, if he says it won't make any difference, or if he says, you know, you're just going to argue with me anyway, or, you know, all those other things, finding out kind of what's getting in his way, and then maybe offering up even the same solution, which is, you know, maybe even not, look, maybe we're not going to save our marriage, but how about just for clarity, just let me know so I can have some peace. Why are you leaving? What's going on? Why is that relationship giving you more than our relationship was? Can you write it? Can you tell me in a voicemail where I'm not even on the phone? Just, again, to get some clarity and possibly giving him that opening where you're not going to have the back and forth conversation where he doesn't feel either threatened that the marriage actually might get saved, or threatened that you're going to make him feel horrible, or whatever it is that's going on. He might offer some more information if he's given a safe, neutral place that, again, he won't be made to feel bad about all of that. So I would try and offer him that.
Excellent. Thanks a lot for answering that question, Dana. I just want to remind folks that are listening in on the call, if you want to raise your hand, please press *2. Got lots more webcast questions that we'll be going to, but if you want, anybody else wants to talk personally, one-on-one to Dr. Dana, please raise your hand with *2. Our next webcast question comes from Maria, and she asks, how do you handle rejection? My husband has actually rejected me when I try to initiate sex.
Yeah, that's really tough. Again, Maria, I don't have you. I'm sorry. We really do appreciate the written questions, you guys. They really add a lot of value. But I want to ask you, Maria, maybe you could write back in again like our last caller did. Is that something that's been going on for a long time? Is that something new? How old are you guys? Is there new situations? Is there a new baby in the house? I mean, there's just so many questions. So I'll just kind of cover all those things, I guess, which is to say there are many reasons why men reject sex, all the way from they just simply have a lower libido. And yes, it's a misunderstanding, ladies, that women all have the lower libido. In fact, men can have a low libido. Sometimes they just don't have just naturally a particularly high sex drive. That's not as common, but that is possible. A lot of times there's health issues going on. High blood pressure can interfere with a lot of things. Carrying weight can interfere with self-esteem, plus performance issues. It can cause problems with performance issues. There's medications that can get in the way. It might have to do just simply with the relationship. It's a misunderstanding that men just want sex for sex's sake. Maybe he's not feeling connected. Maybe he's not feeling wanted. Maybe he's feeling criticized. Again, there's just so many different possibilities. So my recommendation would be to, and she didn't say anything about him not talking to her, so maybe he'll talk to her about it, would be in a separate time and place, not in the bedroom, not when it's going on, literally over dinner on the patio after the kids have gone to bed, to have a conversation about, again, a safe conversation. Hey, I noticed this is something that you're just not particularly interested in much anymore. What's going on? What can I do? What do you think's happening? How can I help? What do you need? All of those kind of conversations. And here's the big thing, listen to him. Don't argue with him. Don't tell him why it's his fault. Don't defend yourself. Just listen to him. And don't tell him what he needs to do instead, Just listen to him and give him an opportunity because, again, sex is an incredibly difficult topic. Sex, oddly enough, for men is an incredibly difficult topic, an embarrassing topic to talk about options with their spouse. And if there is anything going on performance-wise, if he's at a certain age, which is just normal and healthy, that performance slows down somewhat, a lot of men shut down sexually altogether because they just don't want to talk about and deal with what might be going on with their bodies because, as you guys know, society and men and sexuality, they're all just so tied up together. So that's an incredibly difficult topic. So I would attempt to provide, I guess, our topic, interestingly enough, is about communication today, isn't it? That seems to be the theme.
Yeah.
Providing a safe and open, loving opportunity for him to tell you what he thinks is going on. I would start with that.
Excellent. Thanks a lot for answering that, Dana. I just want to remind those of you, lots of you on the call, if you want to raise your hand with star 2, please do so. Do you have another webinar question? So this next one comes from Fred, and he's in the unfortunate situation that his wife is going through menopause and has announced that she's ending the marriage. And he's concerned that the reason it's happening is because of menopause and she's not acknowledging some of the, emotional and psychological changes that go along with that changing period. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. I think, again, that society has made fun of it and sitcoms have made fun of it, but there is an absolute emotional change that shift that happens with women when they go through that. It can cause all kinds of symptoms from irritability to depression to anxiety. It can kick off the age-old stereotypical midlife crisis, basically, where a woman sort of says, okay, this is, I'm now facing the second half of my life, and is this what I want? Is this the relationship that I want? Is it the situation that I want to be in? It does tend to create some major changes. The other thing, too, is it tends to, speaking of libido from our last conversation, is during that time, before everything gets all worked out and, she's possibly on, taking the right hormones or, again, not that hormones aren't for everybody, but for a lot of women that's the case, her libido can drop to absolutely nothing. And that's a difficult time because women sometimes associate that with, well, then I must not be attracted to him or I must not love him anymore or I must, maybe he just doesn't do it for me anymore. And And really, they don't understand that it's actually their own bodies that are, in essence, changing and shifting and betraying them, as it were. But interestingly enough, like the last caller, where she was having difficulties, and I suggested that possibly that might have something to do with where he is in his life and some physical changes. This is an incredibly difficult topic for women. They're talking about their virility, as it were, as a woman. The ability to bear children and all of that stuff is ending. There's a psychological component when that finally goes away, of feeling at a certain age and feeling, like I mentioned, that now you're facing the second half of your life instead of you're in the first half of your life. It's a very painful and can be incredibly scary time for a woman. So it's a topic that has to be handled delicately, lovingly, handled with a lot of love. I love you no matter what stage you are in your life. You matter to me. I find you attractive. I think you're beautiful and wonderful, and all of those things, regardless of what's going on. I just want to talk about how you're feeling. Be very careful that there's, not a lot of blame and all that, and not a lot of, what's wrong with you and why you've been acting like this and so on and so forth, because that would just make her very defensive. And in fact, if it is not a physical change that's going on for her, or it's not the result of a physical change, to find out what it is about her life that she's not happy with. What is it that she wants? What is it that she wants for the second half of her life? What did she look around and find? This isn't what I signed up for. This isn't all I want out of life. And find out what that is and find out how to meet it. Maybe it is that she thinks, I want to travel the world, and maybe you guys can't afford to travel the world, or somebody's job won't let them, but then find out why. What's she missing? Is she missing adventure? Is she missing newness? Is she missing experiences? And see if there's a way to provide that in your current life. So again, there's a thousand reasons as to why she might be looking around and thinking, this isn't what I wanted. But we have to be open in a marriage to dramatic shifts and dramatic changes. I had a couple just last year that were pretty much going to break up, and finally in therapy, she wanted to be somewhere else. She wanted to live somewhere else. She wanted their kids were in college. They were gone, and I finally suggested, where would you want to live? She wanted to live in Ireland, I believe. And I said to him, can you work in Ireland? Well, theoretically he could work in Ireland. Would you be willing? So as far as I know, and I knew at the time, they moved to Ireland. their lives changed. He said, okay, you've been living in my hometown. They lived where he grew up for all those years, and okay, if it's going to keep our family together, it's going to keep my marriage together, it's going to keep, he was lucky enough to have a kind of job that he could do that. And she was blissfully happy again. And I'm not suggesting you guys need to move across the world, but you do need to find out what is it that she's missing and what is it that she needs, and see if there's a way in your current life that you guys can meet those needs together.
Excellent. Thanks a lot, Dana. And just a reminder, *2 if you want to raise your hand. I've got another webcast question now. This one comes from Diane, and she asks, what if you've been connecting with your spouse for a year and they relapse back and forth to wanting to move out? So sounds like the marriage has been, they've been working on it, but it's just kind of maybe just falling back into bad habits and falling back into disconnection.
Well, I would wonder, interestingly enough, if it's going back and forth, then that means that there's no real change occurring, like there's no real progress being made. And I wonder why that is. A lot of times people, and I say in quotation marks, you guys can't see me, but I am, they're working on their marriage. And what they mean by they're working on their marriage is they're not getting a divorce. And, I always kind of look at them like, well, how is that, working on their marriage? Again, to have an example, I've got a couple in therapy right now where he keeps saying, I've tried everything. He's tried nothing. But what he's meant is, I haven't left. I've been miserable for the last 3 years, and I haven't left. So I've tried everything. And I think, well, what skills have you learned? What changes have you made? What new things have you adopted in your marriage? How much time have you spent together? What communication skills have you learned? What therapy have you? None of that. So they've tried everything, when in actuality what that means to the person is, I just simply didn't file for divorce. So when you're going back and forth, over and over and over, my argument often is that you're not learning the right skills. Something's not changing enough, or it keeps going back to the way that it was, or maybe the person's not being frankly honest about what it is that they need to be changed. And so I would really delve further into what is it that's making that, you know, why wasn't the marriage working in the first place? What changes still need to occur? And who's not making them? You know, what's happening with that? And oftentimes, and I don't mean to scare you, oftentimes when people are resistant to stay in the marriage or resistant to commit to getting back in the marriage, there's something else going on. And that's not necessarily meaning that they're having an affair, but maybe they have a fantasy that they'd be happier someplace else. Maybe they have a fantasy that they would, you know, be happy being a bachelor in their own house, you know, with shared custody of the kid. You know, I would argue, what is it they're going, you know, the back is they're going to you, but what's the fourth? Where are they going? What about that life is appealing that they keep going back to you, but forth to that? Like what, you know, where, what's happening with that person that is pulling them in that direction? So it's a twofold problem. It's finding out what about the marriage isn't changing enough. What is it that you guys aren't fixing and fixing that and figuring out what is it that they keep, you know, getting pulled in that direction, to, and why does that seem more appealing to them? So that's kind of a two-fold
Excellent.
Question.
Very helpful. Got another webinar question here from Kurt, and he has a situation that we had alluded to earlier in the call where his wife cheated on him with her ex-boyfriend from 20 years ago. They are back together again, but he's really feeling difficult. He says, like, how can I grow to become confident again? I feel so low and unwanted. And she says that it was about unresolved feelings, and he wants to know how he can learn to love her again.
Okay. You know, again, I always bristle at the word again when people are surviving an affair. I think it's important when a couple has been impacted by an affair let me back up. It's absolutely important to figure out what went wrong. I mean, that's critical, right? What wasn't being met? What needs weren't being met? Why was the marriage vulnerable in the first place? What was happening that person, you know, what insecurities were going on, what needs were being made, all of the things we've talked about in the affair proofing and all the stuff you guys have heard me talk about before, that's vital. But in that's simply to, in my opinion, that information is simply to create a new relationship. I don't think that it's possible after an affair to go back to feeling the same way, and I don't think you should. The same way is what got you guys in that problem in the first place. I don't think that we need to go back to how do I get those feelings back that I had before, the feelings before the affair, the you know, the naive sense of safety and love and, you know, and all of that. You don't. The bottom line is you just don't. You can create a new, deeper, interestingly enough, more honest, more authentic relationship and love with that person, a more I don't want to say grown up because that implies that to not have an affair is childish, and that's not at all what I mean, but just sort of an eyes open, an understanding that our marriage is vulnerable, that all marriages are vulnerable, and that we're going to work hard, that staying together is now not because we stood up in front of God and man and said we promised. Now we're staying together because we choose to. Now we're staying together because we're going to work for this and it's where we want to be. It's a different kind of love after an affair. It's a different state, and I would, you know, we've talked before on these calls, and I, you know, again, I don't really want to kind of rehash the old stuff. I would recommend they actually listen to the call, I think it was last time or the time before that, where I talked about getting out of the memories and getting out of the thoughts and trying not to, you know, constantly spin yourself into a place of thinking about the affair and thinking about what happened and thinking about her with him and, you know, really trying to take a right turn and get off all of that stuff. But again, I guess what the word I pick up on in that sentence is, how do I feel that way about her again? My answer again is you don't. You feel a new way about her. You feel more about her. You feel different. It's love, but it's a different kind of love, and it's a different kind of sense of commitment and hope and an understanding of what it's going to take to make this marriage work. So don't strive for again. That is over. That is done. Strive for a new love, a different relationship, a better relationship than the one you had before.
Excellent. Thanks so much. Again, star 2, we only have a few more minutes for questions, but if any of you guys on the call want to raise your hand, star 2 to raise your hand, and we're going to get back to the webinar questions. This next one comes from Kate, and she says that her husband is always angry and verbally abusive, and she's not sure what to do. Can you help her with that?
Sure. Wow, that is really difficult. Unfortunately, a lot of that stuff is learned. That sort of verbal abuse usually is witnessed by somebody. They watched their father do it. They watched their mother do it. It's actually not gender specific. And they feel like that kind of, you know, and is okay in a relationship. Of course, it's not. Verbal abuse is incredibly damaging. It is a form of abuse. That's why that word is in there. Just as a side note, to be even more harsh, it's incredibly abusive to the children. It's a form of child abuse to witness your parents be verbally abusive. And so there's lots of reasons to stop that. I don't think that, you know, I'm not saying any way to stop the marriage, but there's lots of reasons to really work on that. It sounds to me like, you know, he's got anger issues. He doesn't know how to express himself in a way that's going to get anything done. And all of that can be learned. There's anger management courses. There's individual therapy. There's all kinds of online courses that we can talk about how to deal with anger and to find out where that's coming from. That all being said, and you guys know that I am very pro-marriage and I'm all about, you know, trying to work it all out after going through some significant attempts to help all that. Verbal abuse it's not okay to stay in a marriage that's verbally abusive. It's just not. Certainly not one that's regularly verbally abusive and not one that's verbally abusive in front of the kids. So I'm not saying she needs to lay down the gauntlet and make a threat. I think that she needs to say, you know, I love you and this can't happen anymore and we need to work on it, express how much that hurts her, express how much it makes her feel distant. Show him that whole section in, I believe it's in the sexuality section, I think. It's talking to men on sex, where we talk about the fact that, losing your temper is not sexy. Women do not respect a man that loses their temper. Women do not respect a man that loses control. And we don't find it attractive at all. And, you know, really kind of explaining what that means and where that's coming from and how that's interfering in their relationship and their sexual relationship. And anyway, providing them all the motivation that she can. And then offering a certain amount of help, a certain amount of time. We can talk to somebody. I found this information. We can, you know, look up some stuff online, however she needs to do. At that point, if the relationship continues to be verbally abusive, I would start, interestingly enough, making moves towards separation. I know that sounds extreme from my part, but by verbally abusive, I'm talking some pretty severe verbal abuse. There's some people that just say mean things or call somebody, you know, stupid or so forth, which is not okay either. I'm not in any way justifying that, but I'm talking about some significant verbal abuse. I would move towards, you know, towards ending that relationship if that was something that person really didn't feel like they could get a handle on. So I rarely say that to people, but do not underestimate the damage of verbal abuse to a spouse and to the children.
All right. Wow. That's really powerful. Thanks, Dana. I think we have time for one last question here. It's from Tony, and he says that my wife says she loves me but is not in love with me. We have 3 boys together, and we've been together for 16 years now. She wants to separate temporarily and says, I don't spend enough time with our kids. Please help. I want my family and wife back.
Oh, wow. You know what? You guys are all in the membership, right? So you all got the membership newsletter this last time, and I love the quote at the bottom that says, getting a divorce when you're no longer in love with your spouse is like selling your car when you ran out of gas, or something along those lines. I think that was a brilliant quote.
Yeah.
All of you have heard me say 1,000 times before, it's completely normal to fall in and out of love with your spouse. That is in no way grounds for a divorce, and it in no way means the marriage is over or that you should separate. It simply means that you need to fall back in love with your spouse and figure out what that means and what that takes and what exciting new things you guys need to try and what adventures you need to have together and date night needs to be kicked back up again and how you need to work on your sex life. And, I mean, there's just so many ways to fall back in love with the person you're already married to. Again, you guys have heard me say people who are married for 50 years were not in love with their spouse the whole time. That's completely normal. But they stuck with it, right? They stuck it out and they fell back in love and they tried, you know, and they tried new things and they kicked it up and they spiced it up and they changed some things and they changed jobs or sold their homes or bought a babysitter. I put the money aside for a babysitter. There's so many different ways to really rekindle the love and the passion in your relationship. And of course, you know, Strong Marriage Now, we're all about learning the skills to rekindle the love in your relationship and figuring out how to be happily married. Because you're not just going to do that, you know, just from some epiphany someday. So all of those things, I think that, you know, if he could get that information to her. And then, interestingly enough, there's a sentence right in the middle of that question that says that she doesn't think I'm spending enough time with the kids. Listen to her. That's what, you know, interestingly enough, that one of the fascinating things is that people are often told years in advance what's leading to that divorce by their spouse. They're told years in advance, I'm unhappy about this, I'm unhappy about this, I'm unhappy about this. And their spouse says it over and over and over, and they think, well, it's fine. Oh, it's okay. It'll be fine. Okay, next. I'll spend time with him. You know, as soon as I change this about my job, it'll be, and all of a sudden their spouse says, I'm leaving, and here's why. And those people are shocked. I mean, I hate to be mean, but she says something right in the sentence about what she needs from you. And my guess, I bet the farm that she's been saying it for a very long time. So my other big advice is listen. She's already telling you what would make her happier. She's already telling her what would make you make her respect you more and love you more and want to be with you more. And it's probably more than even that one sentence. So my thing is do what she's asking. Again, really step up and don't think someday, somehow, or it'll be better if. Do not discount what it is. Sometimes it's, you know, it sounds so silly, like, well, what do you mean you're going to leave me because I don't spend time with the kids? It doesn't matter what if you think that that's important. She thinks that's important, and you're married to her. So listen to what her needs are. Listen to what she needs and wants, and try and step it up as much as you can. At the same time, you're learning and helping her understand that it's normal to fall in and out of love and tell her that you know you two can have that relationship again.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dana. It's now around 2:30 and time to end our call. I just want to wrap it up. Thank you so much, everyone, for participating today. We hope you found this very valuable. And if you do have more questions, please go ahead and log in and use the private internet forum that we have on our membership site to ask questions of us and each other. We'll also send you guys an email when the replay of this call is available on the membership site. So if you want to listen to it again or share it with your spouse, you'll be able to do that. Also want to let you know that we did, Dana mentioned earlier, the April magazine with the quote. You should receive that in your inbox with the CD. So make sure you watch for that. I think it came out last week sometime.
Well, not in their inbox, in their mailbox.
Well, in their mailbox, yes, thank you. Duh. So next month's call, mark your calendar, it will be on Tuesday, May 15th at 4:30, and the topic is the number one thing you must do to protect your marriage. And what we're going to be talking about in that call is the most common mistake that couples make and how to make sure you're protecting your marriage so you don't fall into the same trap. So that's going to be a really powerful call, so make sure you mark your calendar Tuesday, May 15th. At 4:30 Eastern, 1:30 Pacific. And thanks so much to those of you who responded to the survey from last month. It is so, it's like one of my favorite things is reading those surveys because we get so much positive feedback on the calls. So would love to hear from you guys what you think about the calls, what other topics you might be interested in, and how we can help you more. And if you're finding what we're doing valuable, we always want to encourage you guys to please invite your friends to join our email list because we're hoping to reach our goal of revitalizing and saving a million marriages. So if you can help us spread the word and help us reach more people at Strong Marriage Now, that would be great. And we will be sending out another survey today, so please take a few moments and give us feedback so we can continue to improve.
You know, Amy, one of the things that I'd like feedback, I'm going to ask a personal question to our listeners now because there's clearly so many of you on the call, and I know that, again, I think we had two, maybe three different people raise their hands today. If any of you would like to tell us on the survey what it is that is getting in your way of having that, of asking that call, if there's any way that we can help you be more comfortable with asking your question in person and on the phone, I would love that information. So I'm actually going to ask specifically if you guys could respond to what it is that's getting in your way and if there's anything that we could do to make that process easier for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right, everybody. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. Bye-bye.